Follow traffic, clear visual approach, runway 4 right, maintain 17 down on the 5 mile final.
17 to 5 out.
Perspectives on next level leadership from a high-flying aviation professional who balances the need for speed with the quest for safety. From the National Business Aviation Association, this is Flight Plan, brought to you by Varion. I'm Rob Finfrock with your trusted source for the very latest business aviation news and information. The 2024 NBAA Leadership Conference took place recently in Palm Springs, California. And it was a record-setting event, with close to 500 attendees from across the entire spectrum of business aviation operations, all gathering to learn how to be more effective, professional, and compassionate leaders in our industry. The conference theme this year was next-level leadership, and prioritizing one's own mental and physical well-being in order to be a healthy leader of a healthy team. Among the featured sessions at the conference was my discussion with aerial coordinator and stunt pilot Kevin LaRosa II, who's best known for his work in bringing to life several gravity-defying moments in the blockbuster hit Top Gun Maverick. And here's part of that conversation. Before we delve into what it takes to do what Kevin and his team does for a living, we'll begin with how he decided on this dazzling but very demanding line of work.
I always say the industry kind of found me. I was very fortunate and born into it. Third generation pilot, second generation aerial coordinator and stunt pilot. And my dad, it kind of found him as well. His first movie was the original Incredible Hulk with Lou Ferrigno, and he had a beautiful Navy on and somebody wanted to use it in a movie and fly it. And he basically said, you know, like hell, you're going to fly my airplane. No one's touching my airplane. And they came back and said, all right, I'll tell you what, you fly it for us. And that's how it started. Word of mouth. He did a good job. It was a good sequence. That director liked him, told another director. Well, that's the industry I was born into. And I loved it. I thought it was the coolest thing in the world to see my dad have this level of creativity and precision. And I'd get to go on set and watch him. He's been my idol and hero since day one. So I knew from a very young age what I wanted to do. Just didn't know how I was going to get there.
And speaking of getting there, you didn't go directly into working in this field. You actually kind of took a detour that might sound familiar to a lot of the people in this room. What were some of the steps that led you to where you are now?
It's a great question. I had a really strict dad, and I love him for that. I was going on set with him, driving the fuel truck and cleaning the windows on the helicopter, and I thought I'd died and gone to heaven, working with my dad in this really cool industry. And I was working on my pilot certificates, and one day, I was 17, we finished on set, and he pulled me aside and said, I got to give you some tough news. But if you ever really want to do this career, you have to leave it. You have to end your time with it right now and go be a professional aviator in the industry. Go do as many jobs as you possibly can, or else nobody's ever going to trust you. You're just going to be a junior, and nobody's going to get in a helicopter, an airplane, or jet with you. And that was really tough advice to hear from a 17-year-old who was already kind of doing what I wanted to do, just not at that level yet. And I took it because I love him, and it was the best advice he's ever given me.
And not only are you doing the flying, but you've actually helped develop some of the equipment that's used, particularly for Top Gun Maverick, for some of these thrilling aerial sequences. I've watched the film. I still couldn't even begin to guess how you pulled off some of those scenes. But you developed a specific platform to be able to do that. Tell us about the Cinejet.
The Cinejet was one of my wild Hail Mary ideas. Sometimes they work, sometimes they fail miserably. I was working on a movie called Jack Reacher, and I was walking back to base camp, and Tom had known my family for a while, and I remember this day so clearly. It gives me chills thinking about it. And we were walking back to base camp, and he goes, hey, Kev, one day we're going to make Top Gun 2. It wasn't called Maverick then. He just said Top Gun 2. I got like chills. Like, this is Maverick telling me we're going to do this. And he said, when we do it, it all has to be real. It's got to be different than the first movie. We have to have a really good story, but we don't yet have the technology. His words. And then he got called somewhere, interrupted, and he went off. And I just remember walking and slowing down, like, what just happened? That was crazy. And that resonated with me. It never left me. And I got hooked up with some cool organizations. I flew a Lear 25, super fun Learjet for the film business with a company called Wolf Air. That's how I got my jet experience. And my whole career while I was flying that jet and doing all these other jobs, I never stopped thinking about that day. And I was always trying to find the technology. What are we going to use to tell this story that doesn't exist and might not ever exist? And I thought of an L-39. And I created this image of this new state-of-the-art gimbal that was manufactured in New Zealand. And I put it on this program paint on the front of the L-39. And I remember telling my dad, that's what I'm going to build. I'm going to build that one day. And partnerships and people trusting me and going with my wild ideas, spending other people's money, basically, came out with what I call today the Cinejet. No movie, no promise of the movie, just a really cool jet, and didn't even know if it was going to work really good. And I remember, this is kind of interesting, the first customer for the Cinejet was not Tom Cruise or Top Gun Maverick. It was Delta Airlines. Delta found out about the Cinejet somehow, and they reached out and said, hey, we have a brand new A350, and we want to shoot it, and we heard you have this cool new technology. Can we use it? And I was thinking in my head, like, wow, I didn't really build it for that, but sure, this is a great way to test the platform. Anyway, long story short, it worked great. And then on a Sunday morning after that, I got a call from this guy named Tommy Harper. And he said, Kev, my name's Tommy, and we're making this movie Top Gun. We heard about your jet. We want to know if you want to work on the movie. And that was the Hail Mary getting caught. Sometimes that happens.
That's great. You know, great, nice initial proving run, nice stable platform, minimal aerobatics, I would guess, with the A350.
Yeah, minimal aerobatics with the A350. They had a good time, though. It was a great shoot. In fact, when you're flying Atlanta Hartsfield or on any of the A350s, all that footage that you see the 350 is from the Cinejet. It's proof of concept.
That's fantastic. So obviously, we're talking about not only, you know, coordinating these aerobatic sequences, but you're also leading a team. And that's perhaps the most, you know, critical aspect here. It's not just you. You're leading a team that you've assembled, that's proven itself to you. You, in turn, have to consistently, I'd imagine, prove yourself to them. So it obviously requires some incredibly talented work. Tell me a little bit about how you would describe your personal approach to leading a team like that.
Well, first off, I think it's ever evolving. You continuously learn, evolve the way you do that. When I put together a team, I have a core group of individuals that I like working with, and that just happens. These factions get built in this industry that I'm in, of people that you trust. I did a job that's coming out this year for the U.S. Navy Blue Angels. It's an IMAX film you'll all get to see. It's pretty incredible. And talk about learning and evolving. In my time that I spent with the Blue Angels, talk about a high-performance organization. They're so effective and so energetic and enthused about what they do and getting in to sit in their briefs and debriefs. But I took a lot of their stuff. But here's something that I look for. And we kind of made these core values. When I pick a team member that's going to be part of a production, we look for people that are accountable and predictable, professional. And my favorite, an aggressive sense of humility. That is my favorite. Somebody who can raise their hand in a debrief or before we even go fly and go, you know what, I don't feel good about that. Or when we land, go, you know what, I messed up or almost killed you or I did this wrong. That is such an important part because as aviators, as pilots, we have an ego. We all have egos and that's okay. That lets us be the commander of our aircraft and be in control of the situations. But to also have that aggressive sense of humility to me means somebody who's constantly pursuing perfection and we're going to be our own biggest critic. So, and a lot of these organizations like the Blue Angels, those were my biggest takeaways. And when we put together these teams, those are the individuals that I want to go fly with.
More in just a moment after this word from our sponsor.
Take your aviation operations to new heights. Introducing Varion, formerly known as ATP, your ultimate partner in achieving maximum aircraft uptime. At Varion, we understand the challenges faced by everyone in aviation. Our industry-leading technology solutions revolutionize aircraft management, so there's no more waiting, no more wondering, and no more wasted effort. Get real-time visibility of your maintenance, inventory, operations, and regulatory data right at your fingertips with an easy-to-use system, backed by a team of experts with deep aviation knowledge offering 24/7, 365 support. After 50 years in the business, we have built a growing reputation for getting our customers more aircraft uptime. That's why thousands of aircraft operators worldwide have already discovered the power of Varion. Say goodbye to downtime and hello to increased efficiency and profitability. Visit Varion.com to learn more. Varion, let's get you more uptime.
We're back now with highlights from my interview with Kevin LaRosa II at the recent NBAA Leadership Conference. And we'll jump right back into that conversation with Kevin's perspectives on a common challenge for many in our industry, distinguishing between when to be a manager and when to be a leader.
I'm still figuring that out. Not the best at that in the world. I think our most valuable asset in the entire world is our time. And I think we have to do a very good job at figuring out when we need to apply ourselves or delegate. And like I said, I'm still learning that. I started a new company last year, January 2023, called X Brand. And that's kind of my baby. That's our house where we have all of our technical aerial production gear. We have two core competencies. We lease and rent gear to the motion picture business or the airlines or OEMs or private jet companies to shoot these videos, their jet mounts and gimbals and cameras. And our other core competency is helping these customers produce an aerial job, like an aerial coordination service from start to finish. When I started XBrand, I started it with some partners. I made a decision as the owner of the company that I wasn't going to hire any employees and I was going to keep overhead low. I did everything. And I've talked to people that have started businesses. I was a horrible manager of my own time. I was working before the sun came up until the sun went down, but I knew exactly what I was building and when it would be time to finally bring on employees and start passing that off. And this year we've hired our first employees for XBrand. But I tell you that to tell you that I'm constantly looking at my time and doing the very best I can to delegate, but we all know when we need to apply ourselves and get a hands-on touch.
Definitely. And of course, safety is an absolutely critical aspect of what you do. Everything hinges on that. We've seen the consequences, unfortunately, when a shoot doesn't go right. When you're talking about safety and when you look at safety and you're planning a shoot, whether it's for Top Gun Maverick or even if it's just a simple, you know, you do some air-to-ground work as well, and if you're just basically tracing a car along the ground, getting that shot, what role does safety play in that? And what considerations do you have to weigh between safety and the desire to get this shot?
I love that question. That, you know, years ago, I kind of created this saying, if you will, about what an aerial coordinator does. And in regards to that, and I feel like this can be applied to anything in business aviation, charter, medical, you name it. But as an aerial coordinator, this is my primary responsibility. My job is to de-risk every single shot to the maximum extent possible that the shot can still be obtained. And if it can't be obtained without compromising safety, my number one job is to say no. The hardest thing in the world is to look Michael Bay in the eyes and say no, or Tom Cruise and say, we can't do that, we have to do it a different way. But that is our most important job on set. At the end of the day, we're making pretty pictures. We're not getting shot at, we're not fighting any wars, and it's my job to make sure the same amount of people that go in the air come back. I gotta tell you, on Top Gun Maverick, one of my favorite people, most patriotic guy I've ever met, is Brian Ferguson, call sign Ferg. He was the naval coordinator on Top Gun Maverick. We would do extensive briefings every day with our talent. We would do 2 hours in the morning, an hour debrief, and then another sortie in the afternoon, another 2 hours of briefing and another debrief. We followed the same formula, and I follow it through this day with every mission I do. We start with creative. What do we want to obtain? And then we get into logistics. How are we going to obtain it? And then we always finish it off with safety and ORM, operational risk management. At the end of these long briefs, and we were all worn out and also pumped to go out and fly, Ferg would always stand up and say the simplest thing I've ever heard in my life. He said, if there's doubt, there's no doubt. And all he was saying is, if there's no doubt that you're not going to come home safely, there's no doubt you shouldn't be doing it. And I love that.
Indeed, yeah, that's a fantastic way to summarize that. And of course, another part of this goes to wellness, being able to, you know, making sure that you're fit, not only to pull off these sequences once you've planned them, but as you're preparing for these sequences and mapping them out and the tools that you use to determine where this aircraft is going to be at this time with the sun at just the right angle and, you know, making sure everything works like that. Going to physical and mental wellness, and again, this is a the themes that we're all familiar with and here in this room, it is so critical that we're at the top of our game physically and mentally. What are some of the checklist items that you look to as you're determining your physical and mental wellness and your team's preparedness?
Well, it's all the basics that all of us in this room probably do, right? Have we had enough sleep? Do we have external stressors? Are we fighting with the wife or the girlfriend back at home? Is there business issues going on? All of those things pull away from our attention span and how we're going to operate that aircraft or operate ourselves effectively. So that's kind of just the personal test. And usually in the morning when I'm meeting up with the crew, we leave the hotel, we go to the base. Before we even get into a brief, we're talking to each other and I can get a good read on people right there. How'd you sleep? Did we eat breakfast? You feeling good? What's going on? So we're talking to each other. We're feeling that out. And we're making sure people feel good about talking about how they feel, not making them feel bad about it. But that's kind of the first step is identifying. And then I guess the biggest thing for me is I use focus to figure myself out. And still, this is ever evolving for me. I'm not perfect at it. We're really good at compartmentalizing as pilots. We can have a lot of stuff going on. And when we get in that cockpit and we shut the door and we flip on the battery, we're usually really good at compartmentalizing and shutting everything off. I use that as my delineator. If I'm thinking about other things in the morning, billing or receivables or issues going on, and I'm not focusing at the mission hand, something's wrong. And I'll usually try to identify that and fix it. All I can tell you though is when we have a mission, we are so hyper-critical focused on everything we're doing nothing else in the world matters. And that's usually what we want to obtain before we go fly.
So let me ask you this. Tom Cruise comes to you and says, hey, I had this great idea last night. I want to have this plane here. I want to have an F-A-18 shooting out of a cannon.
That sounds like the whole movie, by the way.
I know he had a very integral part in preparing some of these scenes. But he comes to you and says, okay, Kevin, I'm looking at you and your team to be able to make this reality. Tell me about something that you're particularly proud of in Top Gun Maverick or elsewhere that you look at that now and say, you know, can't believe we pulled that off. And tell us about how you made that happen.
Yeah, I think we get so ingrained in what we're doing, we kind of forget to pinch ourselves sometimes. We're so focused on the mission. And usually afterwards, when we're celebrating the job, we're thinking about how cool it is what we did. My favorite part is showing the world real practical flying on camera. That is like my core existence of what I do for a living. Any director who comes to me and wants to do an aerial sequence for real with minimal CGI, I'm pretty sure all of us would agree that's the best thing we can ever do. And that was Top Gun. Maximum practical flying with minimal CG. I worked on a movie called Devotion. I don't know if you guys saw that. It was a Korean War movie. I think there was a shot in the promo reel. 70-year-old aircraft. We had Corsairs and MiGs. It was super cool and a lot of real flying. And the director one morning came to me and said, Kev, I want to give the audience a thrill ride similar to Maverick. I want to mount a camera below and behind the Corsair so when it's doing its low-level river run and getting shot at, the audience is literally seeing how close the water is to the prop tips and they see all this energy and speed. So that's what we love doing. We hired an engineering company and we took a Corsair and we literally built a bracket that extended below the airplane and behind it and we mounted a film quality camera. So it was awesome and we gave him the view he wanted. But this is pretty cool. If you know World War II airplanes or big radial engine airplanes, they spit a lot of oil. That means they're working correctly. If they're not spitting oil, something's wrong, right? The second that airplane took off with that new camera mount, it was fodded over, just covered in oil. And we had a live downlink transmission, so we're in the video tent watching it, and the director's like, no, no, no. So we needed a solution, right? And this is where I love the team, the ingenuity. You get everybody trying to figure out what we need to do. And literally, it was two of our technicians one day. It was an off day. It was like a weekend, and we're trying to figure this out. And they went to Petco for something. I don't know what for. And they were in an aisle, and they saw a rubber dog bowl, which matched the size of the camera lens perfectly. And they bought one of those and ran to the airport, and it went right on the front of the camera. And the next thing these guys figured out is, well, we need a way to trigger this thing to blow off when it's time to shoot the sequence. So it'll protect the lens all the way out to the mission set, the Snake River, and then they'll yank it off. So what we ended up doing, which is pretty funny, we had a bicycle, basically a brake wire, all the way from the back of the airplane to the cockpit. It's this big yellow handle right here. And I'd be next to the pilots in the Cinejet, and we'd get out there and go, okay, you ready? Pull it. And you'd see the pilot in there yanking this cord, and eventually this rubber dog bowl would go ripping off the airplane. And we would have approximately 2 minutes before that lens was just completely ruined. And that's when we shot the sequence, and it's in the movie. And I love that stuff, right? A good idea, then a problem, and then everybody's just putting their minds to it to figure out a solution. We called it the dog bowl cam, and it was pretty cool.
And somewhere on a dry lake somewhere 10 years from now, someone's going to come across this rubber dog bowl.
What are all these dog bowls? They're all biodegradable, by the way. No hate emails.
That was my next question.
Yeah.
So we talked a bit about the many successes that you've had in your career and the things that you've been able to pull off. Absolutely fantastic, mind-boggling even some of it. But another important aspect to leadership and ensuring our, you know, mental wellness and how it affects our physical wellness goes to how we handle failure when we don't achieve our goals. How, in your opinion, how do you fight discouragement when, you know, there's a shot that you wanted to pull off, you haven't quite been able to do it yet? You know, never mind talking to the director. How do you deal with that yourself?
That's a good question. Well, first off, I think when we feel discouragement, to me, that means we care, right? So if we weren't discouraged from failing or doing something wrong, obviously we really didn't care about what we were doing in the first place. So that's a good quality. Secondly, most of the failures or people that told me I couldn't do something or it was never going to happen, usually I use that as motivation. And for like my team members and everything I work for, when something doesn't go right or we learn a valuable lesson, it's good. What did we learn? What are we going to do different next time? Or if we lose a team member because of a family thing and we needed that person and everybody's a little down from that, it's okay, good. We'll take this challenge. We can fix this. So yeah, it's important that we are discouraged, right? That it's meaningful to us that we didn't succeed somewhere. But then I think if we take every failure and we try to learn from anything we can from that and apply that, then we've absolutely maximized it. Maybe it's a blessing, because if we always win, we never really know what we're doing wrong, right? But when we fail is when we actually make change, I feel like.
Well, I tell you, you had an amazing path. You were telling me you got your private license and commercial, I believe, or private rotor and fixed wing in 2002.
Sounds right.
So I don't know if any of you out here are familiar with the film 1/6 Right, which came out in 2005. It's the story of Van Nuys Airport, and it really highlights the importance of general aviation airports around the country. Obviously, something that everyone in this room can relate to. And I was literally watching this film a few weeks ago, and we came to this scene toward the end of the film of a student pilot with his instructor in a little 172. And he's like, that's Kevin. So considering where you started from to where you are now, you know, in a path of about 22, 23 years, you've had an incredible journey, I must say. And that is phenomenal. You've come such a long way. And I bet you have a couple of stories or a really good story about how all of these things have kind of come into play that you point to. Maybe at the end of the day, after a you know, particularly challenging shoot, you can sit back and go, you know, that was something really, really cool that I was able to do and something that I was really able to take some good lessons away from. Do you have a story like that, Kevin?
Yeah, I do. I mean, in speaking on the first part of your what you said there, Tom, of all people, actually said something that resonated with me once. You know, he says he didn't believe in luck. He believed in willing the luck, basically putting yourself in situations, doing things that then opened up opportunities for you. And I absolutely believe that. And I was thankful for having a dad that helped me with a lot of things and a lot of opportunities. But all the jobs I did, and I loved every one of them. I flew Part 135 Learjets, 35s and 60s and 55s. I flew medical helicopters. I flew traffic watch and, you know, news helicopters in LA. I loved every business aviation job I ever did. But in my heart, I knew that wasn't my end goal. I knew exactly where I wanted to go. I just knew that I wanted to build as much experience as possible and fly as many different assets and work with as many different people as possible. You know, my dad, one more thing. My dad gave me another piece of advice, which I loved. I got type rated in Lear's very early. I was 19, just a co-pilot. And this advice was awesome. He said, bud, you're going to fly with a lot of different people. And here's your job. Your job is to take things you like from every captain and co-pilot you ever work with and make that part of your own aviator flow. And your job is to watch things that you don't like and make sure you don't do those. We actually all do that as aviators, and we kind of don't even realize it, right? That's how every one of us flies a little bit different, handles things a little bit different, because our eyes are open and we're paying attention. That was my job that he gave me, to learn as much as I could from everybody I flew with. So back to that original part of that question, I loved every job I ever did, but I knew exactly what I wanted to do. I wanted to be an aerial coordinator and pilot that did jets, helicopters, and airplanes, and I needed to maximize my time flying those assets. You asked what one of my favorite memories or jobs was. A lot of people don't know this. My favorite job was actually on Maverick, a big surprise, but my favorite thing I did on Maverick was I got to be the bomb. I got to be the ordnance. When you watch Top Gun Maverick and everybody's slewing the radar and they're zooming in on targets, where do you think that footage comes from? We actually tried shooting it in the real F-18. First off, there's security clearance issues and they're really touchy about that, but it looks horrible on camera. Like if we used the footage of that real radar screen, it would have been miserable. So we had to go make our own radar screen that was then superimposed on that little thing. So the final target and also all the practice. And they said, Kev, can you take your L-39, lock the camera off, and just go bomb targets. Don't hit them. Just get really close and pretend like you're the bomb. I must have done that for 3 or 4 days. I had music playing in my helmet and I had no responsibility other than just to go beat up bombing ranges. And that was the most fun I had on Maverick. No responsibilities, just ripping an L-39 and being the bomb.
Never let it be said that Kevin doesn't have a really, really cool job. You can learn more about Kevin and his work at his website, k2larosa.com. And of course, you can check out other episodes of this podcast at nbaa.org/flight plan. Lastly, be sure to visit nbaa.org/leadership for additional guidance and advice on how to become a true next level leader in business aviation. And that's the latest from NBAA. Remember, you can subscribe to all Flight Plan episodes at Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify, or wherever you find your favorite podcasts, including by asking your virtual assistant or connected device. Of course, you can also download Flight Plan directly from NBAA. I'm Rob Finfrock. Thanks for listening, and be sure to join us next time on a new episode of Flight Plan.
Right base, sending out 3500.
All right, we got him inside. We're still in effect. 170 coming.